All right, My Muscle Project, welcome back to this episode of The After Show. Had a very exciting weekend on the weekend. We'll get into that. I also looked through some of the listener questions this week, some good questions. A lot of questions around the Whoop. A lot of people wondering, honestly, dude, is it as good as you say it is? So we'll get into that. There's a lot of that coming through.
But also, what's been so good now is we're getting follow-up questions to questions on the after show.
Mm.
New territory for us.
Yeah, this is we're going mainstream, and there's quite a lot happening for you and me at the moment. Stuff we can't really speak to just yet, but we have some exciting announcements that maybe towards the end of the year we'll probably be able to start announcing them. Man, if you guys didn't listen, we did another round with Brent Contreras. That was sick. That was an awesome episode on like glutes and hips and stuff. But I'm sure everyone listening to this has already listened to that episode. But in case you haven't, for whatever strange reason, that was a killer episode. I was really proud of that one.
Great interview. Well, and I know I mentioned it, but I've got back into training legs and
They do look quite big today. Are you wearing smaller shorts?
No, I'll tell you what it is.
It's those shorts, dude. They are tiny, yeah. Those shorts.
No, it's the big legs. you know what I was talking to someone about recently? I was looking back at some old photos on the weekend. And so we used to talk about this quite a lot, but some of my calves were absolutely tiny, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the smallest calves you've ever seen. And particularly as my quads have always been pretty big, my thighs.
Contrast.
Made the calves look so, so small. Just like epic thighs, just on these like toothpicks. But I've had about, I'd say, 14 months now of wearing like barefoot shoes. And I do think my calves have grown a lot.
Mm. They're definitely a lot bigger.
They've come up in respectability.
Yeah.
They're like still need work, and I'm actually very enthused about growing them. Like, I want to get massive calves now.
Yeah, dude, they're actually way bigger.
But I was looking through a photo and someone was talking.
Way bigger.
My girlfriend was like, man, your calves are a lot bigger. And we did some before and afters. So I was like, man, my calves have grown so much. And I was reflecting on what has helped them grow. And
I think it's like as your pec muscles disintegrated.
I did a transplant from the pec.
You swapped them.
No, I honestly reckon barefoot shoes like have been massive for calf growth. Because, man, so many times in the last 12 months, I've woken up with crazy sore calves.
Really?
From just wearing the barefoot shoes. Like, oh, my calves are so, so sore.
So, you wore them all day and you like did walking and then you went to bed and you woke up in the middle of the night with cramps.
No, I wouldn't get cramps. Like, I just wake up the next day with crazy DOMS.
Oh, okay.
Just real, like heaps of DOMS in my calves. And that has happened a lot.
Not those shoes.
No, like full barefoot shoes. Even going to just more minimalist shoes, like I just get sore calves more often. Like running in barefoot shoes.
Oh, yeah, calves running, yeah.
Unbelievably sore.
But even with walking, you're
even
that?
Walking, like really, like a big day of walking.
Interesting.
Calves are super sore. And I think that has contributed to the growth. And I think even like what Eugene talked about on the podcast helps like get blood flow to the area.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, I've started doing calf raises as well. But
man, probably everything, right? A bit of everything. The frequency at which you're hitting it.
Yeah.
Well, it's a high frequency muscle, right? So it's so super slow twitch. So in order to get a muscle to respond well to training, you have to train it a lot like how the muscle works and how it operates. So it's fiber type. So like explosive muscles, like biceps and traps and stuff.
Like hamstrings.
Yeah, they do well with those types of movements, right? So like high pulls and stuff are like really good for shrugs. But what's not is like 5,000 shrug reps at really light weights. It's obviously everything still works, but there are just better ways to train certain muscle groups.
And I think they always say calves and lower back are like really built for endurance.
Well, think about what your calf has to do. Yep. Your posture muscles have to support you all day, right? So they are very, very enduring muscles. Like if you cut a slice of your decker muscle biopsy on an erector muscle, it's like primarily slow twitch fibers, right? Imagine having like super high power output oxidative back muscles. Like you would stand up really quickly, really explosively, and then your back would fatigue and your posture would collapse, right? It just doesn't make any sense. And so calves is one of those muscles as well. You have to walk on them all day, right? So if you try and do like explosive calf raises for 5 reps, it doesn't really work because the muscle fibers aren't going to respond to that.
You need like 15, 25 reps.
High reps.
Till it kills.
Yeah, high reps. I guess walking is like the most high rep activity you can do, right? Makes sense.
But it is such a myth. Like it's a myth propagated by people with naturally big calves that you can just do functional fitness. Like, man, you just like squat heavy and you do deadlifts and like your calves get really big.
Nah.
That's just from people that have big calves.
Yeah.
They always have big calves. If you have small calves, you cannot just like keep doing functional fitness and expect you have massive calves. They just, your calves look smaller because everything else is getting bigger around it.
Mm.
We've got to bring back calf raises.
It makes sense. You know, I've just I invested in basketball shoes first time since probably I was 15.
Oh, nice.
Getting ready for my first game this Sunday. And, you know, it's interesting because I hadn't obviously tried on basketball shoes for a long time and the technology's come leaps and bounds since I last wore basketball shoes. And it's almost like the most important thing is like how much extra height can you get from a pair of basketball shoes, you know? Because height makes such a difference in basketball. No, just like on you standing there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if you can add an inch and a half, that's a huge difference. Like that can be the difference between you reaching up and blocking a basketball and like winning the game and like you not reaching the basketball at all.
Yeah, so, like five-finger shoes will never take off in basketball.
Never. They just don't have the grip or the ankle stability, but... basically the most important thing is the height and the springiness that it can give you as well. And fuck, man, these shoes that I tried on, I swear to God, it's like pretty nuts how far the technology has come because you get so much pop, so much height out of the shoes. I was like jumping in the store. I stood next to Ev and I kind of use her as a comparison because I obviously know how tall I am relative to her all the time. And I put the shoes on and we stood up next to each other and she's like, that is crazy. Like if anyone listening to this has worn Timberlands, so those big like work boots.
Yeah.
They give you heaps of height. This gave you more than a Timberland. A Timberland's like a thick sole that's like waterproof. It's for mud and shit. And man, I was like, this is awesome.
Maybe I should get a pair.
Dude, maybe I should. I reckon I could start dunking and shit soon. Like that. I mean, my goal is to be able to dunk. Like I want to be dunking. But man, it's going to be, it's going to be interesting. So I'm just playing around with the camera here. It's messing up. All right. So
even more importantly, you said a all-time MVP record on the recovery for Woot. I think I was winning. I had 15% recovery.
Yeah, yeah.
After the creature throwdown, but you hit 1%.
Yeah.
Are you dead at 0%? Is that like a pronouncement of death?
I think it's 0%. You're it's calling emergency services.
Yeah. Is it automatic?
It's turned into a GPS tracking, and they're hunting you down. The Woot paramedics. Yeah, so I was in Melbourne for the weekend watching the UFC. I don't want to bore everyone on the show with the UFC if you're not into it, but for the Southern Hemisphere, for Australia and New Zealand, it was the biggest fight in MMA history. So the UFC is the organization, the promotion, and the sport is MMA. So basketball is the sport, MMA is the sport, UFC is the promotion, NBA is the promotion, right? So just so people can clarify. Man, it was a crazy weekend because I went there with my brother. He lives in Auckland now. He fights on the same pro team as the guy who was fighting for the title against Rob Whittaker. So Israel Adesanya, he's the Nigerian-born New Zealand native now. And he was versing Robert Whittaker, who's the New Zealand-born Aussie native now. So it was kind of like, it's kind of a weird circumstances, but it was Australia versus New Zealand. There was tons of hype going into the fight. It's a huge weekend. I put 3 days aside, met up with my brother. We stayed in Mad Hotel together in the city of Melbourne. Like, it was just sick. Like, there were people everywhere. The city was buzzing. It's easy to see how Melbourne got voted the greatest city in the world officially. Think Travel Insider or... What are some of those big...
TripAdvisor?
Maybe TripAdvisor. One of those sort of companies who normally does, like, the statistics for the best cities in the world to live in. They normally... Like throughout the year, everyone that has any magazine, Forbes or whatever, they'll reference that list that this particular company stacks all the cities against them. And it goes across like 50 different statistics. Anyway, for 2018, Melbourne won. Melbourne was the best city to live in the world. And man, it's easy to see why. The only thing that Melbourne just doesn't have is the weather.
Yeah. You
know? They have good weather for pockets of the year for sure. Way more than other countries.
Like a few hours at a time.
Well, it definitely gets really cold. I know that hurts you, but I can definitely see why it wins. And I can see why it definitely wins over Sydney. Obviously, the weather's a huge one and it's like hard to get past. But for people that can get past the weather, I mean, has the best sporting access in the world. I mean, it's got the AFL that runs all year. Then it's, you know, got the basketball going on there. It's got the Australian Open. It's got these sort of MMA live events because the city's set up so well that you can just, obviously they can move large amounts of people really easily amongst the city. And like obviously has really good coffee. The coffee is not better than Sydney, but it's more abundant. So you can get good coffee in more places. The food's obviously really good as well. Big difference is like the fashion. I know you don't care about that, but like that's just a thing as well. Obviously there's like way more fashion down there. Designers, people just dress more, people care more. That's obviously important for some people. Maybe Melbourne should like sponsor the show or something, like Victorian government should sponsor the show. But yeah, no, it was a sick weekend. And it was, so Israel, who, spoiler alert, he wins the belt. He beats the Aussie. Rob, who was like undefeated in the division now. Izzy's like 18-0 in MMA, undefeated. He's a boss. Because I got the pre-sale tickets from that gym, I was sitting in the New Zealand, like I was the Aussies. There was like a group of New Zealanders. I reckon there's maybe 50 of us. Mm. And the whole stadium, except for other little pockets, was like Aussies, right? They were going for Whittaker. Like when Israel came out, he got cheers, but he also got boos as well. Whereas like the standing ovation for Whittaker when he walked out was insane. Like it was so loud. So they broke the attendance record in UFC of all time.
Wow.
Yeah, 60,000, 61,000 people. More people than the NRL grand final. And
61,000 people?
Yeah.
Can you see the fight?
Nah. If you're sitting up the back, you
it's
can't
on the
see
TV screen.
Nah, only probably like 50 rows can see the fight. Like not many people can see it because it's so small. It's like a tennis match, right? So most people just watch it on the giant TV, but it was packed. Anyway, this when he comes out and he knocks him out, he knocks Whittaker out, the section that I was in, because it was his gym, right? That was like the section, because Cam bought tickets for me from their gym, gets a pre-sale. They get like an allocated area. Yeah. And it was all his boys, and they were going psycho. And he walked out to this... So there's two of the greatest sporting moment histories that I've ever been a part of live. Number one was when Australia, John Aloisi scored the winning penalty to beat Uruguay, to Australia to qualify for the World Cup.
I was there that night as well.
Yeah, dude, that was like...
That's a big one.
That was huge. Yeah. That was huge. And then the second one that I went to was, I would say when Izzy walked out, so he did this walkout, you know, when the fighters walk out to his song, and he did like this fucking dance routine with these guys. I'll show it to you later. But he walks out and, you know, crumping, that like hardcore hip-hop black style of dancing, they did that. Like, he did this crump routine with, like, an aerial and shit right before he walked out to this, like, gangster hip-hop tune. And because I was with all the New Zealand boys, they're all, like, nodding their head and shit, like, all got their arms around each other. And, like, the energy was, like, insane. Like, the energy at a fight is, like, different to any other sporting event because it's, like, we're pumped but we're nervous because, like, you lose in AFL, it's like, you lost. Yeah. Like, you lost points or whatever. You lose in fighting, it's like, man, there's some brutal consequences, right? It's like nothing else. And I know obviously other sport fans will argue it's like the loss is just the same, but I think there's just a different level when it's like, man, this guy could like end up in hospital and shit, like hardcore. And just the energy when he won and the boys started chanting CKB, which is the name of their gym, City Kickboxing. It's like CKB. And there was like Aussies everywhere booing and shit. They were going like CKB. I was like, fuck, am I going to get caught in like this giant brawl? Have no brawling skills. And it's just going to be like,
fight everyone around you can fight.
Yeah. So I'll just like hang out in the middle next to the biggest guy. And I'll just like push him in front of people, but nothing. There was no fights. There was nothing dangerous. But man, the energy in that room was crazy. So CKB, that gym, they had three fighters on the UFC on that card, and they had one fighter on another card, an Australian promotion that night. They went 4-4.
Wow.
Won all their fights. So can't imagine what it'd be like right now to be in that gym. But that's like bringing home the Super Bowl, right? They went there, four fighters, 4-4, like all. All smoked them. Like there was no question about any of the fights. Like they won easily, it just couldn't have gone any better for them. It's like fairy tale weekend. How my recovery score hit one is because the UFC is on Sunday in the middle of the day. The reason they put it there is not because they want to ruin everyone's Sunday. It's because it still needs to air on Saturday night in America.
Yep.
It needs to be convenient so they can get the most amount of streams, right? Whew. So, obviously, we go out Friday night. It wasn't a super late one. Great thing about Melbourne is at midnight, you can go out and get a really good meal.
Yeah.
We did that once. Remember the 24-hour Chinese place? And so, we got a meal. So, I probably got 5-6 hours sleep on Friday night. So, my recovery score... And that was because we had to wake up and go to weigh-ins the next day at 9 a.m. And so, my recovery score was... I think it was sitting at like 40% on Saturday. And then Saturday night, we go out for dinner and then ended up going out to bars and clubs and stuff till 5 a.m.
Oh, no.
And then we've got to be up for prelims. And I'm going to bed at 5:30 a.m. And it's daylight savings ticked over.
Yep.
So I lost an hour of sleep.
Oh, that's the worst night.
My brother looks at me and goes, so I'll wake you up in 2 hours. And this is me like 12 beers deep, right? No food. Like barely drank any water all night. You know when you just get like that drunk where you just want to like fall face first onto your bed? That's the level I was at. So he goes, 2 hours? I go, no. So I fall face first onto the bed. And literally, I felt like the next second he was pulling my ankle, like, hey, you got to get up. I'm like, no, it's only been like 20 minutes. He's like, that was the 2 hours. And I was like, holy shit, dude. That was horrible. So I go into my Whoop band and I open it up, answer the questions, 1%. So I start researching, oh, how do you get your HRV up? Obviously, sleep is a big one. Couldn't affect my resting heart rate, but skin conductivity, I was like really cold. Like when you don't sleep well, yeah. you go kind of cold and it like ruins your, feel like temperature's too low on your skin or too high, it fucks up your recovery score. So I think that was an issue because I was kind of cold, kind of hot. And then hydration, because I had no water all night. I was just drinking beers with no sleep. The Whoop score was like 2 hours, 2 minutes sleep, 1% recovery. Horrible. Absolutely horrible. But, you know, you do what you got to do on those sort of weekends. And it was a sick weekend. So I don't regret any of it, put it that way. But I did sleep 10 and a half hours the next night and made a comeback. I recovered to 40%.
Wow.
Yeah. Hydration and sleep. Makes a big difference.
I would love to see what fighters, like what it does to a fighter on a Whoop band. Well, imagine the adrenaline and shit, and like it must take a hit.
Yeah. Well, I know the HIV is huge in MMA, right? And Joel Jameson, who we've had on the podcast before, Eugene, who's the head coach of that gym of CKB, he is a Joel Jameson fan. So so they actually brought Joel Jameson to his gym 3 years ago to teach the conditioning stuff, and they do. Ultimate, they do 8 weeks out for their conditioning program. And so he's like a big believer in Omega Wave, HRV.
A different one. He's got a different company.
Morpheus?
Can't remember. Yeah, I think it's some HRV company. Yeah.
But anyway, it's not as good as Whoop, obviously, because they're just like these strap measurements. And the strap measurements is not accurate. It needs to be a 24/7 monitoring. And Whoop's the only band that does that. So I want to like hook their gym up with Whoop. So I think it could be super useful for them. Super useful. But. That's a story for another day. But hopefully they get something like that. It'll be useful for them. They'll use the arm strap as well, so it won't get in the way of like their takedowns and shit, and their striking. But man, they'll get so much benefit out of it. Cool. All right, we've got a list of questions to get into. Let me pull them up right here. Before we jump into it though, tell them about Pilot.
So Pilot, if you haven't heard already, is a new sponsor. I would say probably the most different sponsor we've ever had on the show.
Yeah.
But it's an incredible service. And I do think it's a service that is actually changing a lot of lives in Australia. If you're in America, you've probably already seen something like this. But basically what it is it's a website where you can go and get an online assessment for stuff like skin problems, mental health, erectile dysfunction, the type of problems that you don't love going to see some random doctor who's going to spend 30 seconds with you at a bulk billing center and speak to. They just ask you some really simple questions, and then for $20, an Aussie doctor can assess you and, if appropriate, prescribe a treatment plan as well.
Yep.
And it's all like text message based through their service, and then they order the treatment and it gets shipped to you from a pharmacy. So like you don't really have to do anything outside fill out these messages, and for super cheap, you can just find out, hey, do I need something? If I do, get the right thing.
Yeah, it's funny when you get into the rhythm of like more the health GP side of, sorry, the GP side of health. So I was hanging out with a friend on the weekend, and, you know, he's always kind of checking in on, like, he's had a family history of some health issues and stuff. And so for him, it's really important of checking in constantly. And he checks in like fairly frequently, almost once a week. And for me, I was thinking to myself, you know, why would you check so often? The reason is because with a lot of these diseases and with a lot of these conditions, there's a lot of data explaining how the earlier you get these things, there is an exponentially higher chance of you being successful with the treatment.
Yeah.
It's usually the worse something gets, the harder it is. And they really think about how the body adapts, right? Now, think about someone who has been training for 40 years and is like super healthy. And if they go unhealthy for a year, right? It's a very slow change, right? And the health deteriorates a little bit. But think about, because they've been on top of it for so long, how quickly they can get it back, right? And how quick their turnaround is. Now, think about someone who's not been looking after their health for 30 years. They've been drinking a lot. They haven't been watching what they're eating. Their exercise might only be a little bit of walking. Maybe they played a bit of sport here and there, but overall, they're not very healthy. Now, think about how hard it is to reverse that process. And I guess that's what it is. It's the same body, right? It's the same process, just a different condition, a different disease, right? One's a lifestyle-driven disease. Some stuff, well, might be related to lifestyle, but, you know, hair loss and that sort of stuff is mostly genetic. If you catch that stuff earlier, you have a much better chance. Just like catching poor health earlier, you have a much better chance of success of turning things around if you start the treatment, if you start the exercise program. Like
once you're bald, it's really hard to get a health.
Exactly. Program. Yeah, exactly. But if you start thinning a little bit, you get onto it straight away, that's when it's going to make a difference. And I think just men in general are just lazy. They're like, oh, I'll get to it later. I'll do this stuff later. But I would just encourage anyone, like my friend does, to just get treatment regularly. He's like, man, if I catch this thing early, it's not an issue. But the worst thing I want to do is like, oh, you didn't get treatment for a year and now it's really bad. And now it's going to cost you 6 months of your life trying to fix this thing. So I guess it goes for any of those things. It's worth it. A $20 consult. Use our code MindMuscle. You get $5 off. It's a $15 consult. You can do all that shit over a coffee in the morning via text. It's not that hard. If you've got little things that you're worried about, if your shit's not as hard as it should be, if, you know, sex doesn't last as long as it should be, premature ejaculation, right? If you're losing your hair, it's starting to thin or it's starting to recede, you can at least try and take action, right? It's at least worth it. If you suffer from anxiety, if you worry about things too much, if you feel like you're depressed, you can't be happy all the time, it's worth looking into treatments. So pilot.com.au, MindMuscle, when you check out for $5 off a treatment. The link is going to be in the description. So if you want to check that out there, just click away. Okay, cool. So we've got some awesome listener questions this week. One of them, well, I should say the first one, comes from Meg Helaterra. She asked, I think she asked the question last week. She's on the Bench Booster program, so Meg, hope you're getting jacked. Here's a question for the after show. What do you guys think of intra-workout carbs? Raph said in the last show he prefers to eat his protein and doesn't do a post-workout protein drink. I'm just curious if you feel the same way about carbs or if you see a particular benefit for yourselves or your clients to consuming quick carbs.
Totally different when you're talking about post-workout protein and the intra-workout carbs.
Yeah.
I think I have talked about this before on the show, but in terms of performance benefit for most people, you get a lot more out of intra-workout carbs than you do out of anything post-workout. Because the thing is, post-workout, like, it's done. You know, the workout is over.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can drink a shake, which is awesome, and a lot of people really like it. Or you can just eat food. It doesn't make a huge amount of difference in the long run. But intra-workout does make a really big difference. And one of the biggest reasons is just because it affects your performance in the session. Like, you perform so much better.
Yeah.
So I recommend it all the time. I take it myself all the time, particularly when you train like a lot or it's hot, you just feel so much better. I think we had Pap on. He was having like, I want to say like a quarter of a bag of True Endurance a day.
Yeah, yeah. For his running thing, yeah.
100% on his hikes. Yeah, this makes such a big difference. And I think also just doing more, because I've done like just plain carbs. I've done like True Endurance, like a blend. And you do get more out of some sort of blend that has like a few more different things in there. I do think it helps with cramping. It just gets it right when you just have... When you just have sugars, it's just not the same.
Yeah. Now, I think that pre-workout nutrition can dramatically affect your... I think it will affect your performance almost more than your intra-workout, depending on the workout. But for most people, if your work time is somewhere under 90 minutes, I think that your... unless it's like continuous work for 90 minutes, which most people don't really do. If there's sets, reps, rest, packing up, packing down, that sort of stuff. I think generally... pre-workout is going to make more of a difference, but the longer the session goes on, the intra-workout makes more of a difference. Now, there's some research that Yami Tikkanen actually posted up about a long time ago. I just remember reading it, and it had something to do with testosterone levels beyond, I think it was 45 minutes in a training session. And basically, after 45 minutes, you started to see a massive decline in the amount of like free testosterone circulating through the body, and therefore that was resulting in decreases in strength and that sort of thing. Now, calories, protein, carbs, all that stuff, fats is related to testosterone levels. So like having a lower calorie diet, so going into a deficit, you do get decreases in your hormones, primarily testosterone, and then being in a calorie surplus, you're going to have higher levels of testosterone naturally. Now, that's not going to apply into the session, but I like thinking of it as the idea of like, yeah, if you can fuel up maximally before the session, you're going to give yourself the best chance, you're going to be most primed to have the most energy in that session. Now, I don't think the intra workout is going to make much of a difference if the session is short, if it's under 90 minutes. But it doesn't, it's kind of case by case, right? I have found as well, like when I did a lot of hard CrossFit training in between the strength sets, drinking a little bit of extra carb just so I was more ready, primed for the conditioning piece, always helped. But now that I'm doing bodybuilding, primarily in strength work and some basketball and stuff, what helps the most is just being really hydrated before I train. Yeah. That makes the most difference.
But it also helps you hydrate faster.
It does.
Having some carbs and a good mix before, like when I'm going down for an hour and a half run on a Sunday morning, I get so much more out of it when I drink basically intra-workout carbs before the session on my way down there. Because it hydrates you better.
Pre-workout carbs. Up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It makes a big difference. Like you hydrate way better with glucose in your water.
Yeah. And then, but also with that being said, you've got to make sure the ratio is right. So not having enough water can also be detrimental. And I think that's what you experience with the gels.
Yes.
You don't have enough H2O in your system to...
Three gels, no water.
Yeah, because H2O is the vehicle that's going to be transporting the glucose into the body or into the blood for the different things that it's required for, whether it's just being burnt straight away or whether it's being injected into the muscle for recovery later. You do need an adequate amount of water. Without it, it's just going to sit in your intestines. It's not going to be able to be absorbed.
Yeah, like you can't just keep double scooping, triple scooping carbs into the same shaker.
No.
You got to just drink more water. You got to have the same shake, drink the whole bottle, then refill it again.
Well, how nauseous did we feel when we had 4 scoops of post-workout or 8 scoops of true post in water during the first 10,000 calorie challenge?
Yeah.
It felt horrible. It felt actually nauseous. So that's because it wasn't diluted enough. It was too thick. So, yeah, adequate hydration with carbs, mostly pre-workout, and then a little bit of intra, I think is probably, for most people, a really good balance that you can find. Cool, next question. Well, I guess this is kind of a interesting one, but Avi Talsh, 0305, what's your favorite fitness topic to talk about? I guess something's going to come up.
Good question. I remember someone talking to us in high school. They're like, man, you could talk about squats like for weeks and you get so serious about it. And
squats.
Probably the time was 100% true. Some things I think in fitness do have like more nuance than others, right? Mm. Like you can talk about like some lifts and some things like really to the fucking death.
Yeah. You can beat the horse to death. I mean, it just depends on where you're at the time. But if we're talking about right now, Matt, I really enjoy sharing my previous experiences with people about when we used to like compete in CrossFit and kind of the transition I've made to now. And it's funny because when I talked about it last week about transitioning out of competitive CrossFit and how I had to kind of reset myself, I got quite a few messages, people saying the same thing. Hey, man, this is where I'm at. This is what I've been doing. Fuck, it's so interesting to hear people say that. I think there's even a question today related to that. I think that a lot of us live through, and I think it was probably the biggest movement in the fitness industry ever to date. A lot of us lived through this rise of CrossFit, right? And everyone took part in it in some way, shape, or form. A lot of people got involved in the sport of CrossFit. And I think it really confused a lot of people about what long-term exercise programs need to be about, right? Because I just don't see the sport of CrossFit being a long-term exercise program for anyone. Can you really imagine doing bar muscle ups and kipping toes to bar at 55? I guess, but is it going to be as sustainable as maybe like strength training, bodybuilding? I don't know, maybe some like light plyometric work and stuff? Probably not. But I mean, don't use CrossFit Masters athletes as the indicator as to like if you can do it or not. These are guys that are like genetic freaks, right? If you look at a lot of their rap sheets, it's like, oh yeah, college D1 quarterback or like, yeah, Olympic track team medalist or something, right? So
number one performer at my like testosterone replacement therapy.
number one customer. I do like talking about my transition out of the sport of CrossFit just because I think so many people right now, especially listening to this, can relate to it. And there's just so much more exciting stuff. I just want to bring your fun back to training. And I think for a lot of people, the sport of CrossFit sucked a lot of fun out of training after a few years. They got a bit defeated over the whole thing.
Yeah, 100%. It brought heaps of fun at the start, and then it's like anything, right? It's like a pendulum swing.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what made it harder. But yeah, I think, you know, the one thing I'd say about fitness that like never changes, I do think, is like the mental aspect of fitness.
Mm.
And because it's unbelievable. It's like, it's always hard. And people have this like weird thing, like, oh, let's look at advanced athletes. And they're like, oh, it's like not hard for them. But I think like one thing we learned doing CrossFit and doing that type of training is, still hard for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, even like the very top guys, like still really, really tough for them.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Still like really hurts the workout, everything like that. And it's like, you can do it for so long and then you can have like a bit of a break and then you come back. You're like, man, this is like so hard.
Yeah.
So I find those type of topics interesting. I find like books about it really interesting. Like how bad do you want it and stuff like that?
Mm.
Cause the stories just never get old. And like everyone can relate to it.
Yeah, they're awesome.
It's like everyone fights that battle when they go to the gym.
Yeah. You know, he brought out a new book.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Man, I can't remember what it's called, but it's more like an autobiography. Apparently, it's really interesting.
Oh, I did say, I think it's like called like the marathon or something like that.
Yeah, it just kind of talks about his life. He's got this crazy fucking life that no one knew about.
Mm.
And he kind of reveals it a little bit, but yeah, it's pretty bananas.
But like that is really the topic that brings all the different iron sports and fitness regimes together.
Right.
Is it all tough?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they all got like a crazy mental battle and they're all just different. Like the weightlifting battle is like, I don't know, I guess it's different to the bodybuilding battle.
Mm.
But it's all a battle.
Yeah, it's sick. Cool. Next question is from Jake D'Alucio. How would you train for a half marathon? No access to weights for a strength session.
Well, I just did one and no access to weights. Not a massive deal. Really depends where you're coming from. I think what I talked about after this is that I think, and I noticed everyone doing it, just did way too much running for how much you actually need to do. Like, it's not a huge amount of running, right?
Mm-hmm.
Half a marathon. You just don't need to run that much.
Mm.
You really don't. And the reason when you look online, you're like, oh, like half marathon program. The reason there's so much running in it is because everybody who's doing that program, running is like their only fitness.
Mm.
So if they're not running, they're sitting at home.
Mm.
So like, yeah, they need to run like 3-4 times a week. Otherwise, they train. That's all they train.
Yeah.
But if you listen to this podcast, like you'll probably do strength training. You probably do like, I don't know, assault bike stuff, rower stuff. Like
you're not coming off the couch. Yeah.
Yeah, you're doing like a whole breadth of training. So if you're doing that, like running once a week, potentially twice a week is enough.
Yeah.
100% enough. And it's like doing a proper progressively overloaded program there. That's your ticket to success because 90% of people pick up injuries along the way to a goal like this.
Because it's too much volume.
Yeah. And that's what sets them back. Because it's a high impact sport running.
Yeah. And look, if you are looking to supplement the sessions with something else and you want to do your 1 or 2 times of running per week, but then you want to add extra stuff in that's not running, but you don't have access to a gym, then obviously bodyweight training is really good. Because you're doing a unilateral event, you should do a lot of unilateral work. So less squats and more lunges, for example, single leg calf raises, not just double leg calf raises. You can do all kinds of like upper body training, like push-ups and pull-ups and rows and just...
I did quite a lot of stuff like single leg deadlift, stuff like that.
Yep.
And I do think that stuff's really good. Just to get that single leg stability in. And like you, even if you don't have access to a gym, you need so little weight to do those exercises. Man, right. You can honestly get like milk jugs.
Yeah, yeah.
4 kilos is plenty.
If you just execute it with really good form,
yeah,
it's a challenging exercise. The other thing as well is I would just like focus on like good postural exercises. One thing that a lot of runners have is like really bad forward head and like really bad postural muscles, and that really affects their ability to breathe and access their lower lungs properly and use their diaphragm. So some breath training would go a long way as well. Learning how to breathe into your belly, learning like running and focusing on nose breathing as well could be a really good technique to use and employ as well. So bringing up your threshold at which you can nose breathe. So some of the oxygen advantage stuff I think would help a lot. And this is like training that you don't really need a gym for, right?
Mm.
Just the breath holds you can just do as you're walking. So
last one I experimented with was also, I mentioned I brought back the weight vest.
Mm.
I do reckon it's sick because what the weight vest allows you to do is you can go out and you can just walk and you still get training. So right. It takes away the impact of running and brings in like the joint strengthening aspect of running. Because like you're still walking, you're still like strengthening the same muscles. And if it's heavy enough and you're walking quickly, like you're still getting cardiovascular benefits. It's not that different to jogging slowly.
Right.
It's pretty much the same. So if you have access to that, I think that's a sick option as well.
Yeah. Hopefully that answers everything. So next question is from M. Jukes Daly. Advice for training when you no longer have a competitive CrossFit as a goal. I mean, we sort of just touched on it a little bit. I think we touched on it last week. I think we answered the same question. So we did a really long response last week. So I'll give you something a little bit shorter to take away this week, which is hopefully still useful. There's two aspects of it. There's the aspect of, okay, what are you doing for training? So obviously you still want to train in the gym, you still want to do some kind of training. So that needs to change. It doesn't have to be CrossFit anymore. If CrossFit's not your sport, it can be any sort of strength conditioning or any sort of bodybuilding strength, whatever you want it to be. And then what you choose next, if you still want to do a sport, choose a sport, choose real sport, choose... I don't know, rock climbing, choose soccer, choose, I'm playing basketball again, right? You can do whatever you want. Just because you haven't done it for a while doesn't mean you can't pick it back up again. I'm buying basketball shoes for the first time since I was 15, you know, like it's totally cool. I'm excited. It's going to be really fun. Just if you want to keep that competitive thing alive, just pick a new sport.
Yeah. And I think the way I look at it as well is like, don't be afraid to like be proud of being a gym junkie in whatever sport you choose. Because say you're doing like CrossFit training, right? We were just doing the things that got us good at CrossFit.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think sometimes people are like, oh, I don't want to start basketball because I don't want to just train basketball every day.
Mm.
Like I still love the gym. I still want to keep doing all these things I've been doing for ages. But you still can't. You just got to like embrace your inner gym junkie. And it's like, yeah, man, I'm doing like whatever. I'm doing like basketball. I'm doing like some adventure race stuff or whatever. But I still want to be jacked and massive.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I still want to be doing like strength training. Maybe I still want to snatch.
Yeah.
Because it's sick and I spent like 6 years getting good at it. Yeah, I don't want to throw it in the bin.
100%.
Yeah, like so I think embrace that side of it. Don't think like what you did for CrossFit where like that's the only thing I'm going to work on. You have to take into the next thing.
Yeah.
You know, be like the guy at the adventure race that can also still snatch 120. It's still sick.
Yeah, you get to bring a new energy to your training that helps. Like you can... So now when I'm training, I'm thinking, oh, cool. If I do this, it will make my basketball better.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm still training just as much. But I'm also like, there's still the 3 sessions a week that are the majority of my program. I'm still trying to look good.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to get big. I'm still trying to get strong. Obviously, I'm in the middle of a weight cut right now. Start of week 4, end of week 3. Melbourne. You know, I still managed to stay relatively on track to macros minus the 12 beers on Saturday night. But Asian food, when you take away, is my advice. Because Asian food is always portioned out. It's like rice, vegetables, some kind of meat, right? So that's my advice when traveling. But yeah, I think just in general, like you were saying before, is you can still be that guy that plays basketball and just is the most swole dude on the team.
Yep.
You know, like that's cool.
And the part of the way I justify it in my head is I think I want to keep training because I don't know what the next thing is going to be.
Exactly.
So I was thinking, GPP. Okay, yeah, exactly. I'm like, I know this is what I'm doing right now, but I know the next thing maybe is going to be this.
Yeah.
So you just got to like keep training, keep be strong. So then, you know, you're playing basketball, but then you might be like, you know what? I want to hit like a deadlift goal.
Yeah.
And you're still there.
Yeah. You know, haven't not deadlifted.
Yeah, you're still there.
Months, yeah.
So that's the way to think about it. It's just like, take a long-term view of it. And I think you might get excited about your training again.
Yeah. Hopefully that's helpful. But feel free, if you want more advice on that stuff, to message us personally. Like I said, we do like talking about that stuff at the moment. So next question is from aschultz84. How much better is Whoop than other devices? Example, Garmin, Apple heart rate measuring, blah, blah, blah. Look, we've said this a lot of times before, but the reason that Whoop is better is because it has, well, even has a patent on this, but it has 24/7 HRV monitoring. And I just discovered today, as I'm doing it right now, you can actually, so I used to think that you have to take the Whoop off and charge it in the wall with your battery pack. No, no, no. You charge the battery pack in the wall, the battery pack unclips and clips onto Whoop. So you actually never have to take your Whoop off ever.
Wow, that does make sense.
Yeah, dude. It's sick. Now I can like just keep, because sometimes, okay, yeah, maybe it only takes 1.5 hours to charge, but you stick it in the wall, you go do something, you forget, you haven't had your Whoop on for 5 hours. But now I just slide the battery pack over the top, it charges it, I just pop it off in 90 minutes, fully charged. 5 days in between. Sick.
And then to compare it to those other things, I've got like the watch, because I can just broke the strap, which is maybe another negative for it. But no, I have like a same thing, like a Garmin type of watch.
Yeah.
And so it's different, right? It's really different. In terms of like heart rate, it's the same. It does the same shit, right?
Just heart rate, but not heart rate variability.
Exactly. It does your heart rate, so it'll take your heart rate through the night. Some of them will give you sleep data, but it's like just based on your movement or based on your movement and your heart rate. It doesn't do heart rate variability, which is the variability between heart rates, which is like what you can... is a really good indicator for recovery.
Yeah.
But I think the more unique thing about the Whoop, why I like it, is it puts all those things together, including your subjective thoughts on how things are going.
Experiences,
so it's really the putting all together, which you can't just do in your head.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the other side I really like, and it's probably the biggest one, is you don't actually need to touch the Whoop.
Yeah.
So like, you know, we live in an age where everything's so distracting. I see my clients with Apple Watches, I actually hate it. Because they always get phone calls during a training session.
Yeah.
I see them like in class and they're getting
sending
phone calls.
Sending text messages
and
stuff.
And I'm like, oh, it's so bad. Because they've already done the right thing. They've already put their phone away. But then it's like still on their watch.
Yeah.
So I hate that aspect of it. But also I notice the same thing with my watch. Like I'm about to go for a run. I got to like set the watch. Like set it up. Okay, cool. I'm about to exercise.
Yeah.
What I like about the Whoop is I just like, I cannot actually have any interaction with it for 3 days.
The auto detection.
I don't do anything.
Yeah.
If I want to, I don't open the app.
Yeah.
It still knows when I slept.
Yeah.
And it still knows when I trained.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the best part. Yeah. I mean, exactly what you said. And the other thing is, well, they have the HRV. They take HRV at a very specific time during your sleep, which they noticed, which was the... Remember the thing that Will spoke about on our podcast? He goes, oh, you know, we had to spend heaps of time. We're trying to figure out an algorithm for this, like for the very particular HRV score. What he was referring to was there is a period in your sleep. And I think this is something that he must have studied at Harvard when he had access to the research facilities.
Yeah.
But it was a very specific window of time during your sleep cycles where they take HRV, where it gives you the most accurate score on when you are or how recovered you are. And that is like personalized for everyone. So that particular window is like longer, shorter at a different time for different people. So wearing the Whoop over time, it gets a more accurate data of your recovery. So that's one thing that I think is a lot better than the Apple Watch and the Garmin, is that Whoop gets, it gives you like personalized recovery. Whereas like if you and I go and do the same activities, eat the same foods, have the same hydration and whatever, your Whoop is still comparing your data based off an algorithm that it's built out that's unique to you. So you might get a 50% recovery score. Mm. I might get a 12% recovery score. And it has nothing to do with the standard stuff. Whereas I'd say with a lot of other just heart rate technologies that measure just windows of time, like you might be 40% recovered, I might be 38%. It's like not that accurate.
Yeah.
So I'd say yeah, the accuracy of it is just, it's superior. It's built for this shit. There's a reason that LeBron James uses Whoop and he doesn't use the Garmin, right? That shit's just,
well, it's for a different, it's just tool. Better. The Garmin is for running, like, and yeah, triathlons and shit. Yeah, it's they're more GPS devices.
Yeah, it's more timing stuff. Yeah. And yeah, this is like recovery.
And the recovery aspect to those is just a byproduct, whereas this is like the whole thing is recovery.
Yeah.
And they're closing in on being able to tell you the time. They're going to update it one day. The final yeah, frontier.
That's for the hard Whoop. One. They're going to get a patent on it. Cool. So next question comes from Molly Wilmot. Thoughts on carb loading? Well, it just depends, right? It's a context driven question. What are you carb loading for? If there's a very glycogen demanding event you need to be fueled up for the next day, then yeah, carb loading is a great thing. If you're just eating a normal diet 7 days a week in a regular training program, it's not really a place for carb loading. You don't really need it that much. So it's kind of a hard question to answer without the context around it. It's good, just depending on what you use it for. Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know how else to answer that more.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, unless it's an extreme endurance event, like those, I remember when we used to study this, those like 3 day carb loading protocols are not necessary.
No, it's not.
Unless you're like,
we're not that savage.
Yeah, you just need 3 days to load your carbs for it. Like you need 1 day.
Yeah. Next question from Dinner Night.
Thoughts? I do remember though, after the 10,000 calorie challenge, my muscles did feel so full when I went to the gym next day. Like you do notice the difference.
It's true. And you have a lot of energy.
How many carbs did we have that day? I think we want to say we had like 1,000 grams.
Yeah.
Yeah. About a kilo. I think we hit 1,000 grams of carbs.
Started measuring our carbs in kilos.
And yeah, man, you feel the difference.
Yeah. You do. Okay. So thoughts on Adesanya Whitaker. Already said, did you expect the result? That's from Dino Knight. I did expect that result. Adesanya was going to smoke Whitaker. Undoubtedly. I had no doubt that he would beat him. Just a better gym. Better gym, better coaches. Yeah. All that sort of stuff. Insider knowledge. Last question is from Coach Eric Martinez. At what point do you realize you've outgrown your facility and to move on to the next thing? Ooh, big question.
Good question.
Big question from Coach Eric Martinez. So, Eric, it sounds like you could be one of two people. You could be a gym owner, or you could be a coach at a gym.
I thought he meant as a client, like he'd outgrown the place he was training.
Oh,
at.
Really?
Or you mean he's like the business has outgrown it?
At what point do you realize you've outgrown your facility and move on to the next thing? That sounds like he's involved in the business aspect of it. Yeah. Does that sound like that to you or not?
The way I read it was he's like someone that's like getting too good for his gym. Like it's time to move on to the next gym.
Outgrown your facility and move on to the next thing. Okay. You know what? You start answering it. And I'm going to see if this guy's like a coach or not so we can get a better answer.
Good question.
For this.
Well, I'll answer the one about if you're a client. It is a good question because I do think it happens pretty often. I think there's two sides to this. I think one is the side that it's like in your head and you think you're getting really, really good and you're
he's
actually
a PT.
Not. He's a PT. He's a PT, so he's running the business?
No. So it looks like he is like just a PT at a gym. So I guess he would be like one of the head coaches there?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a question close to our heart, obviously, because we've done running gyms for a long time. And yeah, I think it's a good question. It's a good thought process to go through. I think that once you've got to the point where like you and honestly, probably the people like you're working for, the place knows it as well. Once there's this really like no room to grow left in the facility and they have no real plans of expanding the facility, like they really, because a lot of people that get into this, it's like a lifestyle thing, right? They don't want to ruin their lifestyle by like really expanding it and trying to create new opportunities for you. Once you've got to that point where they're not really trying to grow and there's not much room left for you to grow, it's definitely time to move on. I think you need to move on really fast. because you're just going to end up spinning your wheels and not feeling very fulfilled there anymore.
Yeah. I don't know if I have much to add to that. I guess it's like one of those things where if it's... Well, for us, okay, so when we moved on from our facilities, I was a coach at a CrossFit gym that I first started at. And exactly, that's kind of what happened. I mean, I just didn't feel like I was a part of the team. I felt like any good relationship, you want to give as much as you can, but at the same time, you want to feel like it's reciprocated. And as soon as that imbalance exists, where one person's giving a lot and the other person's not giving back, it's never going to be a perfect 50-50. But you want to see like the effort, right? At least the effort's got to be there. I'm trying as hard as I can as the owners and the leaders in my facilities, and I want to see the staff putting in the same effort. And when the staff's going above and beyond, I expect that I'm going to go above and beyond for them as well. So it's just about incorporating that balance, I think, is like the one of the most important things. And as soon as you feel like that balance has been out of whack, you try and address it, you try and reestablish a good balance between those two things, and it doesn't really change anything, I think that's when you realize, okay, there is nothing else for me here. That's how it felt for me. That's when we decided to open our own gyms. Opening your own gyms is not always the best option, and for nine times out of 10 is a worse option for most people, because quite frankly, honestly, running a facility has very little to do with how good of a coach you are, and far more to do with how well you are as a business person.
Well, I think a good option that, like a middle ground you can hit, is when you, rather than just kind of like thinking about it and getting disgruntled, is like going back to the owner and looking for more opportunities within the space. So maybe you go back, you're like, hey, I want to do more, I want to do this, I think there's opportunities here.
Yep.
And as long as there's something in it for him or her, they're often going to be open to it.
Yeah.
Right? But you might just never really have gone and raised it. You're just doing your thing, and then you're like, oh, maybe I need to move. Maybe you don't need to move. Maybe you can just go back to them and be like...
Communication, right?
Yeah, there's more opportunities here we're not doing. I would love to do this. I would love to do this. And we've had coaches do that before.
Yeah.
And make money out of it and do really well. Like, hey, I wanted this extra stuff. And they're like, sweet, all good. Like, I'd love you to.
Yeah.
Because maybe they don't have the bandwidth or the energy to do that.
Yeah. It's just sort of it's the standard that you set with your coaches, right? Are you setting like a environment of trust and an environment of a place where people can come and bring you their ideas and feel safe to do so? I think it's called an idea meritocracy. That's what Ray Dalio calls it. Place where everyone from the guy who cleans the fucking floors to the person who, you know, runs the Facebook ads or whatever, they all want to feel like they can contribute in any way. Even if it's not in their particular area of field, even if they're 100% wrong and it's the worst idea you've ever heard, the idea is, or the purpose is, that you set a culture where people are trying and they're creating those ideas. And you want to feel like you're a part of one of those businesses. And that's the places that we want to come from. A lot of it starts with the expectations at the start. I think if you set the wrong expectations of the culture and how to bring ideas to the table, it doesn't happen. And then people start forming their own ideas about how they can run a better facility or what they could do somewhere else, which is like the last thing you want to be involved. But if you're kind of at that point already and you feel like it's not salvageable, then it may be time to move on.
100%.
Cool. All right. We've got one amazing documentary to review. It is what we spoke about last week. The documentary is Bill's Brain on Netflix. It is a 3-part series, 1 hour per episode, of the inside life of Bill Gates and kind of everything that he's up to. I almost feel like I don't have to say this, but I'm going to say anyway. Bill Gates founded Microsoft. There might be some millennials out there listening to this that have no idea who Bill Gates is. But yeah, essentially he was for the longest time the richest man in the world. I believe he got overtaken by who's Amazon?
Jeff Bezos.
Jeff Bezos. I think he's the richest man in the world now, if you disclude like all the corrupt, like Russian politics and shit. Or maybe some of the Abu Dhabi princes and stuff.
I think Jeff is the richest guy in the world. Oh, he is. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, Bill's done more, I think, for this world than probably one of the top five most influential people in human history. I would say, because he built Microsoft, which basically started the computer era, and obviously it was the hardware in which the internet was being able to be built on. Oh man, which is like, that's pretty hard to go past. I'm thinking about it now, like, fuck, you built the platform for the internet. That's crazy. We're not sitting here doing this without Bill Gates, And I guess now it's more just about, okay, we all know kind of the Microsoft story. You built that, computers, blah, 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 like billionaire. But what's he doing now? How is he spending his later years in life? And man, he's like more active than ever, which is the crazy part. He's doing more good for the world than, yeah, like 50 charities combined. Should we spoil it and just kind of dive into all the different pieces of it? I guess it's just good for everyone to listen.
Yeah, I think it's really good. I mean, the crux of it is like, it's not another thing, just like the story of him building Microsoft. It's much more about like what he's doing now.
Yeah.
What he's doing now for the world. And man, there's a lot to learn in it. Like in the first episode, they go a lot into basically how he's trying to like reinvent like plumbing and basically what you do with like
sanitation.
Yeah, sanitation. Like after you go to the bathroom, what happens to that in developing world? Which I didn't realize is like one of the biggest causes of death.
Horrific.
In all those countries because they just like don't know how to get rid of the shit.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. So it's eye opening, even just like without the Bill Gates stuff, just from that perspective.
Yeah.
And worth a watch.
Yeah, yeah. The sanitation situation in developing countries is, so poor that it almost makes you sick watching it, right? And the beautiful part is there's someone like him out there who's like, cool, let's go invent a toilet that doesn't need water, you know, that flushes itself. He's just one of those guys, though, that he's so powerful and you realize the conversations he's having with certain people is so important. But it's also crazy to think that there are so many people that have the power to change something like this and they're just not involved at all. They're just building weapons or missiles or whatever that engineer was doing, nuclear weapons for like the US government. Bill's like, hey, do you want to like kind of sidestep out of like military and like death and destruction and more into like saving the world? The guy's like, oh, it didn't really cross my mind, but yeah, sure. It's like, oh, fuck, it was that easy? It was that easy to fix these problems? But I guess, yeah, it's just funny how the world works. People can only kind of set their focus on a few things. The second episode is really good as well. I think what was cool about Bill is just kind of seeing how he's definitely different, obviously. He's definitely a special guy. But how he's just like always crazy focused on different things. Like he goes to this hut every year for like 7 days and he just sits in silence and just like reads books and drinks Diet Coke. Dude drinks so much Diet Coke. But yeah, he just reads in a crazy, crazy amount of books. And they reckon he has like a 90% retention rate on books. They reckon that of all that, he's like one of the guys in the world that knows, can talk about, contribute a lot to any subject. Like you present any subject in front of him and he's got like a well-read opinion on any of these subjects. So I'm like, wow, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Like have that much memory retention. I'm not sure I was messaging about the documentary, but they were saying like, oh, it's crazy how insignificant he makes me feel, his life. I think that's always a bad attitude to take with people like that because so often we just build these people out to have some crazy story in your head about who this person is and what they're like. There are so many aspects to Bill that you don't know about, which I'm sure if you were privy to, you would not feel that way about him anymore, right? You wouldn't feel like he's as much of a superhero as he is. He definitely is, but there is no way you get to that level without seriously sacrificing on some other aspects of your life. And so I said to that person, I'm like, look, you are way healthier than Bill Gates. Like you can do things that guy cannot. Like you can go climb to the top of that mountain and you can ski down it and you can do that for a fucking week straight. I'm like, that dude's hips and knees and stuff are probably, at your age, were probably so useless and banged up. He's probably so unathletic that he's never been able to experience what it's like to ski quickly down a mountain and go over jumps and do really physical activities because he's never wanted to. He's wanted to engineer. He's wanted to sit at a desk. He's wanted to do these things. So I never liked taking that attitude of like, oh man, look what he's done and I could never do that and that's crazy and I feel pathetic. It's like, no, there are things that you're an expert at and that you can do uniquely and maybe you won't ever make the impact that Bill Gates has. Lots of people won't though. So it's not like the whole world, it's not like one guy rises to the top and now everyone's depressed. It's just like you got to focus on what you can do and what's special about you and what you like to do and what you're good at. And that's good enough, you know, and pursue that. It's not like, and look, I don't think this person was being like overly dramatic, but I think there are people out there who see that and they get very depressed about their contribution to the world. No, there's definitely stuff you've done and there's things that you're good at that he like can't even, you know, hold a candle to. So, yeah.
That actually was a hilarious video. I still remember it. I think it came out like 2008 and it was like Bill Gates' last day at the office.
Oh, yeah.
Because when he retires, like the CEO of Microsoft.
Right.
And it's like him in the gym.
And oh, really?
Like, yeah. It's like really, actually really funny. He's like making fun of himself, I think.
Oh, yeah.
His bench press sucks. And he's like, his PT taking him through this workout. And he's like got, I want to say like 95 pounds on the bar.
Yeah.
like left side comes up 30 centimeters before the right side. But he does try and stand up his health and fitness, but I can't say he's a gym junkie.
No. I don't think he's ever had a six pack.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe when he was young, he's pretty skinny. But look, that's the conclusion. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. Bill Spence, definitely worth a watch. I think he's one of the most, like I said a few times, most impactful minds and humans in all of history. So it's definitely worth a watch.
Yeah. Yeah, 4 out of 5 for me as well. And it's interesting because they tie in so well, like what he's doing now with like flashbacks to his life as well. It's like really seamless.
Yeah, it's really well put together. All right, guys. Thank you for listening to the After Show today. Everything we talked about today, all the brands, all the deals, everything else is in the description of your podcast. So as soon as you finish with this, if you're interested in anything, just go to the description of this episode and the links will be there for you to click on. All right. Thanks, guys. We'll speak to you next.